All right,
All right,
and
all right, all right.
are we ready? Are we ready?
Now, Andy.
Yeah.
Why did I do it like that?
And she'd be like, huh? What's up? All right. All right. All right. All right. We are back with episode 62 of the Guardian Project Podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and I am the overloaded cyclonic drift you did see coming.
Yeah. No, you pretty much always see it coming.
You usually see, you know, seven mana. I've held off on it before.
I call myself out on it. I pass ominously with seven mana up.
That's the best way to do it, though, because then they don't play it out, and then they effectively counter themselves.
That's right, and you don't even have it. And
you don't actually have it that time.
And I'm your co-host, Mike Coyle. And so I brewed up this new deck. It's of only flying horses, and it's based on late 60s and early 70s psychedelic rock music.
Is it the Flying Purple People Eater?
It is not. No? I call it Jefferson Mare Plane.
Please listen carefully.
Yeah, a middle finger from the producer. That's a win. That's such a win.
That was a good one, though. I wasn't going to get there, though. But I thought Flying Horse, and I was like, maybe it's a purple people eater because it's psychedelic. And
oh, yeah.
I don't even... What year is that? What era is that song from? I used to listen to the crap out of that song.
To the Purple People Eaters?
He was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple... You know that song?
No.
You don't know that song? Am I alone here? Am I...
Okay. That's a thumbs up that he's alone.
That I correct. Am alone? No, no, Ryan knows it. Okay, I was like, I can't be alone here in this. I think I've listened to that song like 500 times. I have no idea who sings it, what era it's from. But there was like a remake, but I feel like it was somebody who just like jazzed it up. Okay. Zataran style.
That's another reference I don't understand.
You don't know Zataran?
No.
The jazzy rice, it's the minute rice that you buy in a box.
Let me put it this way.
Jazz it up.
When you said purple people eaters, the first thing I thought of is the Minnesota Vikings that almost won the Super Bowl.
When I think of the Minnesota Vikings, I think of Lizzo. And that's the only reason I know that their team exists.
New man on a Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, that song was... Man, that song's really good. But we should probably do our episode,
that's
right?
True.
So before we start, we want to thank all of our patrons. We appreciate all of your support. If you would like to support, you can head over to patreon.com/guardianprojectpodcast and join our family. Jump into the Discord and hang out with us. Schedule some games. Come on stream. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, tons. And if you're looking for another way to support the podcast, you can always, and whatever you are listening to the podcast or watching the podcast on, if you could drop a subscribe, if you could throw up a like. Ooh, don't throw up. Throw a like.
Throw it up.
Throw up
the like. Just
and a follow. We'd really appreciate it. Any comments about things that you would like to see or things that you liked would be greatly appreciated so that we can form our content for you, the audience. We also have a TCG player affiliate link located in the show notes below, as well as on our website over at www.guardianprojectpodcast.com.
We do.
Woo.
So I know you saw it because I showed you before we left to do the show. So I have been trying to get some posters to replace some art that I had purchased a while ago. I had some art from an artist who has... done some things that a lot of people don't agree with. Yep. And I agree. And I said, I need to get rid of these arts, but now I've got these really cool frames that match the room. I like bought these frames because they match the room. It was going to look really nice. And so I said, okay, I need to replace these. So I've been trying to find a bunch of those like magic posters that the shops usually get as part of like the WPN program. Yep. And those are usually really hard to find. So shops can't sell them. They have to give those away. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to secure one for Theros Beyond Death. And then I got a really cool one that's foil from Ikoria. Then I found on eBay the Core 2020, just promotional poster someone had when they were selling it. So that was cool.
Yeah.
And I bought a Ikoria poster, and it's the Zalortha card, which is actually just the Godzilla King of the Monsters card, which was the Biobox promo, but it was going to be the non-Godzilla art. But then because the card was only a Biobox promo, the non-Godzilla art didn't get printed.
Oh, right.
So it's really the only way that you can find that poster, or I guess find that art really anywhere. I guess it was on the preview stream for it, but so I got that. That was really cool. I've only had one casualty so far. I bought a posters. So I had five. I did have the art for the five Planeswalkers when those were done as a San Diego Comic-Con promo. And so I said, I have one more that I need to get. And I ordered a BattleBond promo poster. And it had been taking forever to come in. And the person messaged me the day that it came in. And they said, okay, we see you got it. And so I opened it up and the box had been mangled by the shipping company. Mm-hmm. And I go, this is not a good sign unless it's inside one of those really hard cardboard tubes inside of this long cardboard. They put it in a box, not a tube. Right. I felt really bad. They did a lot. Actually, the box itself had like these secured things inside to hold like a tube. And it was actually quite comical looking at it because there were so many creases on Zindersplit and Oaken. Oh, I said, well, can I even hang this up? Because maybe it'll just, if it was like even, maybe I'll just hang it anyway. No, because it was also like ripped and damaged on the corner. I can't imagine anybody who's shipping something big like that right now.
No, it's not a good time for shipping.
Also really hard to ship things like that. But on top of what's happening with the postal service right now. Well, everything's delayed.
I mean, you remember when Wizard of the Coast was sending out the foil uncut sheets. I mean, there was probably only, and this is, I'm literally spitballing and putting a number out there, probably only 20% of the posters arrived undamaged.
I mean, mine was damaged. Yours was damaged. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I remember seeing a ton online. It was so funny because I finally got that framed. I know I had tweeted out a photo of that a couple of weeks ago, probably last month or maybe the month before. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And someone was like, oh, you framed your apology? I said, yeah, because it was a poster sent out as an apology for having the great mythic edition debacle. Mm-hmm, and then those were messed up. So then they printed more of them, or maybe they just had more. I have no idea. I feel like, no, they were printed for that because they said, we're going to send an apology.
Right.
So, yeah, and those were in really hard. I mean, those the containers for those are solid.
Yeah, they were.
Those weren't, the container wasn't damaged. It was just bent before it went in the container.
Most likely, yeah.
Whatever rolling process they had for that.
Which they had to do hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of.
Is it a machine, you think? It had to have been, right?
I think it was probably done by hand.
Yeah,
I think so.
That's tough.
Yeah.
So before we start today, we have a couple of announcements. The first one is that this weekend is Command Fest Online 2.
Number 2.
And when you read it, it looks like Command 2 Fest Online.
That's confusing. Command to Fest?
Command to Fest. So it's the week this weekend, so August 22nd and 23rd from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific time. There are going to be some panels. There's a bunch of games lined up. There's discussions on how to introduce new players to Magic. There's a committee rule, the rules committee panel, and a lot of popular streamers. Actually, Zuby, friend of the show, is actually lined up for 3:30 on Saturday to play with Graham Stark and a couple of other people. So that's really exciting. Awesome. Yeah. So we'll be tuning in. I'm sure we'll be playing games all weekend. So if you're in our Discord and you want to play some games with us, let us know. Otherwise, we'll be in the queue. If you didn't play in Command Fest Online, the first one, all of the queues are done through Channel Fireball's Discord channel and you set up your games there. So if you weren't aware, head over there this weekend. There will be lots of Commander played.
Yeah, and also this Thursday, we're going to be streaming some Paper Commander. We're going to have returning friend Andy Zupke, a.k.a. EDHD_Andy, over on Twitter. And we're going to have Bruce from the Epic Experiment podcast, a.k.a. at EpicXPcast.
Yes.
So yeah, Andy Zupke writes a lot of Commander articles, and then Bruce, he has his show about budget-friendly EDH cards from Return to Ravnica and forward. So hope you can join our stream, twitch.tv/ATFlory, Thursdays at 8 p.m.
8 p.m.
Eastern time.
E-T.
Yeah.
E-S-T?
E-S-T.
E-S-T.
E-S-T. E-S-T.
All right. What do we have on the agenda today?
Today we are going to talk about the new secret lair. This is Prime Slime. There is an update to Spell Table. Oh, is it an update to the website or an update to the company?
I bet you'll find out really soon.
And then we are going to spend a majority of this episode talking about Morrow's article of the state of the design for 2020.
Yes. So the newest secret layer has been released. It was so funny because last week we were talking about, on the drive over to record the podcast, we said, wow, remember when everybody said there were too many secret layers? Yeah. And then they all just went away for just months.
Disappeared.
And I said, I wonder when we'll see another. Oh, wow. You know, just...
They listen.
Literally, when we, you know, it's, they say people hear what's happening on your phones. You know, everybody's, they heard me. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's time to drop slime time.
All right, slime time it is.
Prime slime. So the Secret Layer website says you have found the secret layer here. Here be treasures unlike anything else. And this is a curated set of cards with an artwork that is very reminiscent of what I feel like I used to watch on like Cartoon Network as a child. Mm-hmm. Like I really love it. So the cards themselves that you will get in this are acidic slime, mm-hmm. necrotic ooze, scavenging ooze, the mimeoplasm, and a void slime.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the artwork was done by Wizard of Barge. So I actually went and checked out their artwork on mm-hmm. Twitter. Really cool stuff, all very much in the same artwork style. So that was really cool.
Gotcha.
So you get these five cards. They are non-foil and they are, actually no longer available for purchase. They were available, yesterday and the day before. Mm-hmm. And they were non-foil, which was very exciting for a lot of people.
Yes.
Because they did not want them in foil and they are not going to look like Pringles when they arrive.
Darn right.
So, the best part I think of the summary of what Prime Slime says is, though you can see right through them, Wizard of Barge knows that their jiggly jelly bodies contain multitudes. And I think there was actually a tweet earlier today. I don't have it on me, but there was a tweet about how you can actually make one of the slimes. And it was like, you have to throw in teeth and it's like a teaspoon of baking soda. But it said you had to actually, when it said throw in some teeth, it was like, no, you actually have to throw the teeth.
You have to throw them. There's be force behind the teeth.
If you set them or you place them, it doesn't work that way.
You can't fold them in.
You just fold them in.
No, you throw them in.
You throw
them. You have to throw them.
You toss. No folding.
No folding
allowed. Anybody who has watched Schitt's Creek, that is the best episode of Schitt's Creek. You just fold the cheese in. I don't know what that means. Fold it in.
Just fold it in.
Fold it.
But these are super sweet cards, totally playable in all types of decks. You don't need an ooze tribal deck, but I know a lot of people are talking like, I can finally make ooze tribal now.
You can, you know, and the best part is that all these cards are actually playable in Commander. There isn't like one that's bad. Acidic Slime is great. Necrotic Ooze is a combo piece in a lot of decks. Scavenging mm-hmm. Ooze is just great. The Mimeoplasm is one of the commanders from an actual face commander box set.
That's right.
And then Void Slime is a counter spell, which is really great. And I don't know if you did take a look at the Void Slime, but on the actual card itself, mm-hmm. it has flavor text that is pretty fantastic. It says Cyclonic Rit, and then it cuts it off. It's like, blah, 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 blah. Because the wizard goes to cast Cyclonic
Rit. Oh my gosh.
It's so great.
That's pretty great.
So it's just counter target spell, activated ability, or triggered ability for a green, blue, blue. So it's pretty great. It's super mana intensive, but in a Simic deck where you already got those three colors, what's it matter? You can play this wizard getting slimed.
That's right. And you get to go Void Slime.
Void Slime. Yeah, so I'm excited for that to come out. And it says that those will be delivered later this year.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Next on the agenda, we have our Spell Table update.
Oh, so good. This is the best program.
Yeah. So Spell Table, if you don't know, is a program that we use and many, many, many people use to play online paper magic, specifically Commander mm-hmm. For us. And it's, you know, a lot of people were using just like generic video apps like Skype or Whereby before, and Spell Table is really catered to the Magic player with life totals and card readers and all that stuff. So really, really awesome to announce that Spell Table and Wizards of the Coast have joined forces.
They have.
So quickly, this is a note from the owners of Spell Table. So they're very excited to announce Spell Table and Wizards joined forces. Since they began this project, they've been Definitely felt the love and passion of the community, especially probably during all this COVID time when people were running to their application.
And we know that they pushed this out sooner mm-hmm. because of everybody being at home, and they made updates and improvements since we've even started using it.
Absolutely. So in discussions with the coast, they realized that their goals were perfectly aligned to make playing Paper Magic remotely as fun as possible and as easy as possible. Can't really imagine a better home for Spell Table to continue to grow. The considerable resources and relationships provided relationships provided by being part of Wizards of the Coast will allow them to continually improve the experience. They hope that the leverage and the opportunity to better support local game stores with features and benefits to keep your local communities thriving through this difficult time. And to the patrons of Spell Table, they wanted to give a special thanks to all of you who supported Spell Table throughout the beginning and made it what it is today. You will actually be receiving a refund of your last patron payment. So they're pulling themselves off of Patreon because Wizards of the Coast is fully funding.
It's fully funding. Yeah, that's really exciting. So I would expect that we're going to probably see a lot more improvements mm-hmm. To the program. And I assume that at some point there will be a monetary requirement. I'm just assuming.
Maybe.
You know, maybe sign up for this and maybe a one-time payment to help support the back end here or work on improvements.
Very possible.
But to be fair, people that had already supported as a patron, mm-hmm. they, you know, it doesn't come as a surprise. They were already donating whatever it was to, you know, that they wanted. So
that's very true.
We've actually had on stream some of the folks from Spell Table jump in, with us. So that was really great. I think actually one of those times you clicked the back bar.
I did. They started freaking out. It was right before Command Fest Online 1.
It was. And Coyle clicked back in his browser by mistake. And I was like, oh, we lost Coyle. But we still have his audio because we're doing audio through Discord. Mm-hmm. And they were feverishly typing in the chat, oh, no, is there a problem? And we go, nope. I clicked back on accident.
They were like, What's the error log? Personal error.
Coyle clicked back. So I'm really excited for Spell Table to be... joining Wizards. I think that we're probably going to get a lot more features out of it a lot quicker. And now it looks like they're gonna have a huge organization behind it. So I'm really happy for the guys over there to have joined Wizards.
Yeah, and so we use Spell Table for our Thursday streams. They're gonna be using Spell Table for Command Fest Online coming up this weekend. And I think you have to join the Channel Fireball Discord in order to get some games in for Command Fest Online this weekend. So familiarize yourself with some Spell Table and jam some games with your friends.
Yeah. All right, let's jump into State of Design 2020. So I know last year we discussed this article. And so each year they talk about the overall highlights, lessons they've learned, and they talk about the individual sets. These are not like master sets. These are core sets that are released. And they talk about what was good, what was bad. And so we wanted to talk about this article, see what lessons were learned, the highlights, and then talk about it as it relates to Commander specifically. So some of the highlights were that there was a lot of Magic purchased and played in the last year. So it actually says that this year there were more people that played Magic than ever before, and there was more Magic product purchased than ever before. So we play paper primarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, even when we're playing online, we're still playing our paper decks. We do play Arena. We don't play an MTGO, so we do have some money in digital paper, digital Magic.
Right.
Digital paper. Digital I guess paper. It still works. Kinda, it's digital paper.
It's digital paper.
Yes, we have some money. And isn't all, it feels like a lot of money. It's just digital paper.
It's mostly digital paper.
just mostly. So, you know, banks work that way. So another highlight was that there was a lot of design innovation, and the booster and collector packs were a huge hit this year. So they said they started with Throne of Eldraine, had the first of two new big things. So first was Booster Fun, where they started making alternative versions of cards, including showcase cards with frames that portrayed into the set's themes, to borderless planeswalkers that took our most popular card type and made it look extra cool that players could collect. They said the initiative has been wildly popular, with players embracing the new cards with gusto. Mm-hmm. And they also introduced collector's boosters, which made collecting all the hard to get cards a little easier. Those have also been a really big hit, selling out every set. And it's nice to know that even after 27 years, there's still ways to create extra excitement when players crack boosters.
Definitely.
I actually do usually crack maybe one of those collector's boosters, because it is pretty cool to open a pack that has every single thing in foil, or it's got a different alternate border. So that was really cool. We actually just opened some beforehand when we participated in the Commander Family Reunion weekend. We did get some swag sent to us from Wizards of the Coast for participating. You'll see pictures of those later. But we opened up a couple of packs from Theros Beyond Death. We got a collector's booster pack for both Throne of Eldraine and Ikoria. So we'll tweet out what we opened later. But spoiler, it's really cool stuff.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, really, really cool stuff. Some lessons learned, though, in the last year is that they had some balance issues.
No way.
Crazy. You know, we might have talked about it a couple of times. But it said, let me start by stretching that this is not Mark Rosewater's area, so he's not going to dig into too much of what happened here. But obviously any year where we have the number of bannings that we had this year is not really ideal, and all that he can say is to this lesson is that they're working hard to correct the issues that led to this year's mistakes. I think a lot of people we had Oko. I mean, we just had a swath of bans just a little bit ago.
Yeah, I think there was like 8 or 10 cards that got banned this year.
Yeah.
Something like that.
It was, I don't have the exact number, but there were quite a few bans.
A lot.
Yeah. Another lesson is they need to be better at thinking about the ramifications of all formats. So it says, for much of Magic's life, R&D could design cards for Standard and Limited and just call it a day. Times have changed, though, from Commander and Pioneer to Best of One Standard, Modern, Historic, and all other formats being played. It's become a much more complex meta environment for design than it's ever been before, and they need to adapt to how they design to better reflect this new reality. This isn't to say they haven't made a lot of changes, but there's more that they need to make.
It's very interesting that that Mauro actually singles out Best of One Standard and how much Arena Best of One Standard is actually affecting the meta.
I love Best of One Standard.
I mean, I do too. And it's important that you actually pay attention to it, but it's not like a constructed real, quote unquote, real format. I mean, Best of Three is your tournament style.
When you have a sideboard, you're not sideboarding. Yeah. You're just playing game one.
You could still Best of One with a sideboard if you have wish cards, though.
That's true.
Or a companion.
Or the Vivian that grabs cards. Is it Vivian that grabs cards from sideboards? Is it Vivian?
Which Vivian? The new Vivian?
It might be the one from...
That you get creatures from your sideboard? Yeah.
I don't know. One of them gets something from your sideboard. I don't really play it. I just know I've seen it happen before, and they usually grab something. I don't even know if it's creatures. I thought it was just grab a permanent card. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But... Yeah, Best of One Standard. So they're going to be designing a little bit differently to keep other formats in mind. So it's exciting. So, I mean, but we knew that's because they started designing previously with Commander in mind, and we started seeing a lot more legendary creatures. I mean, Ikoria alone had a ton because the companions were all legendary creatures. Then you had legendary creatures aside from the companions. So...
Very much.
Yeah.
So,
and then the other lesson was that this year could have been more mechanically cohesive. So they're still adapting to a blockless world. Having a year where every set occurs on a different plane and has a unique set of mechanics is a challenge to create mechanical flow throughout the year. This is what we want you to have the ability to build decks that you can evolve as new sets come out. We experimented with having a couple of themes, monocolor and enchantments, for instance, weaved in through the various sets, but it's still something that they acknowledge needs more work. And there are a lot of advantages to not having blocks, but there's some challenges that they still recognize that they have.
Right.
And it said, while we're still improving, they still have a long way to go. So when I started playing, we had three set blocks. Then it moved to two. And now they're gone.
Right.
So although the first year that they moved to the one set process,
right,
it was Ravnica and then Ravnica and then another set that was still on Ravnica.
So stayed on Ravnica.
We stayed on Ravnica. So it felt very much like a three set block, although it's just, it was guilds and then allegiance and then war. So right.
The one thing I noticed the most about the whole switch between the blockless format that we have now is I personally feel that standard decks have become every single card in the deck is a bomb, and it's not as much as building around a certain mechanic anymore.
Yeah.
Like, cause I remember when I first started playing standard, when I first started playing Magic, I mean, I had a one drop that's a 1/1. When it taps, it drains your opponent for one. And that was like one of the best cards in my deck. And now it's like Uro.
On turn two. And then on turn three.
And then Nissa and then Ugin. I mean,
and then turn four and then Ugin the second time.
Super Friends decks weren't really a thing at that point, or I guess War of the Spark. I think
we still have War
though.
Of the Spark.
Yeah, that's true.
War of the Spark leaves. We're not going to have this whole these whole shenanigans.
Goodbye,
anymore.
Three Fairy.
Yeah, well, we're already banned. So I say we like it's me, like we're BFFs.
Yeah.
Hey, Teferi.
With Teferi.
I'm so sorry. You sit in the corner over there.
Bye-bye.
So the first set that we go over is Throne of Eldraine. So I love Throne of Eldraine.
I liked it.
Fantastic set. So the highlights was that it was a top-down fairy tale design, and they said that was a hit. There was some skepticism inside Wizards that a fairy tale-inspired set would be a good idea, and they proved them wrong. The set was a big hit, not despite the fairy tale designs, but because of them. And the Camelot inspired stuff was also really well liked. It just cut, you know, it got less focus from the audience.
Right.
So I really liked the theme. The audience enjoyed a softer tone as well. It says part of the worry of doing a fairy tale theme set was that a lighter tone set did not historically have a good track record. And the success of the Throne of Eldraine really demonstrated that Magic's audience is growing and embracing a wider appetite for variety, especially things further away from Magic's core of a hard-edged fantasy.
Sure.
So I the flavor of this set was cool. And if I'm going to get a Gingerbrute in a pack, I'm going to stick it in any deck that I play. Yeah. I play Gingerbrute, I think, in three commander decks.
It's a really good card.
I just really like Gingerbrute.
Yeah.
It's a 1-1.
It's a 1-1, potentially unblockable. Probably unblockable.
But it's haste and costs one generic mana.
One generic mana.
It works in all the decks.
It, I mean, you can play it in literally anything.
Including colorless commander.
Yeah. I guess.
Yes. And then adventure cards were loved. The mechanic accomplished a number of things. One, it was fun to play. Two, it was flavorful and allowed a lot of lovable cards. And three, it stretched the design space of how we can do multiple effects on a single card, giving us new areas to explore in future designs. So you get two spells on a single card. You have a creature and a sorcery, or a creature and an instant. It doesn't matter what it was. I will still play Brazen Borrower. I love that card.
It's
the
really good
Beanstalk
card.
Giant, really great card. Yeah,
you know, someone mentioned that Beanstalk Giant needs to be played more in Commander.
I think it does. I mean, you're going to go grab some basics.
Yeah.
And then, or a basic, I guess.
Yeah,
then its power and toughness are equal to the number of lands you control.
Yeah, it could get big.
It's just huge. If you're playing, I mean, budget commander, anything, you're just looking for a specific basic and you're playing green.
Mm-hmm.
Does it cost three or four?
It costs three. So it's Rampant Growth, but for three instead of two.
That's fine. With a creature tacked onto it.
Exactly.
So you can use it later.
Exactly.
Yeah. Twofers. I like adventure. And if we go back, that's a set that I want. This is a set that I want, and that's a mechanic I'd want back.
Would you want the mechanic available on another plane?
Adventure?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to Zendikar. It's the adventure plane. I assume this is not going to be on Zendikar. They've got their own. They've got their own stuff. But I would not mind seeing adventure cards somewhere else. But I do think that it fits really well with the fairy tale design that they're going on an adventure.
Totally agree.
You've got the whole story of the hero, and they go out, and then they have their journey, and then they come back a better person.
Mm-hmm.
It just fits like the storybook, the fairy tale.
Very
theme.
True.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
They come back dead. Those happen too.
I mean, whatever. You shouldn't have gone to fight the dragon with, you know, ill-equipped. That was your own fault. It breathed fire on you and you didn't have fireproof equipment. I mean, you seem like you were ill-prepared. You weren't really the hero. They All didn't right. save the princess. So, lessons learned.
Yeah, so lessons learned. So, the first lessons learned here listed is too many elk. It's hard to talk about Throne of Eldraine without talking about Oko,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
So one of the challenges of making a Planeswalker card is designing something that's exciting. It is evocative without becoming overbearing in gameplay. And Oko failed real hard at that one.
Yeah.
So a big takeaway is Oko's design is in the need to be careful with what kind of effects we do with a positive loyalty cost. So, you know, maybe they took that, you know, when they moved into the Guilds of Ravnica and the War of the Spark, you know, and they brought out all those minus planeswalkers, like, yeah, that's what's supposed to happen. But a plus one to turn something into an elk, yeah, maybe not. But we can limit negative loyalty effects, but positive ones can just be done turn after turn. So making things into an elk, for example, needed to be a negative loyalty.
Yeah.
So totally agree there.
Couldn't agree more.
So adamant was another keyword that they had. It was a forgetful keyword. So if you ask players to list the mechanics in Throne of Eldraine, everyone will list adventures, but a lot of people forget adamant. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't all that good. It didn't seem to really have a place or a use. It wasn't something that was inspired that inspired any kind of excitement. Looking back, I wonder if we could have found a mechanic for the Camelot side that helped the monocolor theme rather than adamant, but possibly in a slightly more flavorful way.
So adamant, you know, I did look up some cards on Scryfall, just the mechanic itself, and there isn't a rare card with the mechanic adamant.
Right.
They're all commons and uncommons. Adamant itself requires you to pay with three specific mana of that color. So for one example is Foreboding Fruit. It costs two and a black. But if you pay black instead of two generic and a black, you get really an additional effect. So target player draws two cards and loses two life, but adamant, if you spent three black mana to cast this, you also create food. Mm-hmm. So it was cool to get the additional benefit, but it's definitely a more limited mechanic here. Right. That benefit isn't necessarily going to help you in Commander. And I think that might be another reason, is people aren't remembering this mechanic, even just from standard play. I mean, it's not really adventuring out into other formats.
Adventuring out?
Huh? I actually didn't try that.
That was really good, though. No, but it, just into comparison, I know this was meant for monocolored, but the Mythos cards that they brought out in the latest Ikoria, where it had an extra addition if you spent three colors to cast it rather than one color,
yep,
definitely feels a lot better than the adamant mechanic did.
Yeah.
So last note for the lessons learned was limited was kind of slow. And I actually want to get your opinion on this because you loved limited.
I don't know how many times I drafted this. So go ahead.
So another common complaint I got was that the limited format could get a bit sluggish, part of which was food played a big role and allowed you to gain a bunch of life. A related complaint was that Witch's Oven and Cauldron Familiar combo involved two uncommon cards and it showed up a decent amount of time in limited games.
Yeah. So in limited, there was a lot of food. And there was a lot of bulky creatures that if you didn't have flying or some sort of evasion to get around them or remove them, you just felt like you were at a stalemate. Mm-hmm. And then whoever got to the highest life total could just start swinging. But if they had bigger things, then you were kind of done for. I never really saw Witch's Oven and Cauldron Familiar come together in the limited format too often. Mm-hmm. It really came together in draft, never in sealed. And My issues with Cauldron Familiar don't stem from limited.
Stem from Arena.
They come from standard, from actual standard constructed and not a limited format. Mm-hmm. I am not sad that they accidentally like roasted that cat and it didn't come out as delicious food in the oven.
Sad face.
They accidentally cooked it too long and it was unedible.
I mean, it goes to the graveyard when it gets cooked. It dies.
But someone also dropped the pie.
That's right.
They dropped the cat pie. Yep. So, limited could have been slow. Yeah. I don't know if I really recognize that.
Well, I'll say that. So the only limited that I played other than draft on Arena, because this was back in the before times. Eldraine was released in the before times.
It was.
And, I know I went and played Two-Headed Giant with, friend of the podcast, friend of us, mm-hmm. and patron, Torin. And when we played Two-Headed Giant, we had like kind of a black-green, it was a black-green food with blue-white flyer strategy. And our games all finished fine, but everyone around us was going to turns, like all the time. If it wasn't aggro or mill, then it was going to turns every single round. So yeah. I didn't see it personally, like in my own games, but I definitely saw it in the games that were playing next to me.
Yeah. The next set is Theros Beyond Death. So the highlights are that players enjoyed returning to Theros and liked the things that they brought back. So one of the reasons they do returns is many of the players like revisiting worlds they loved in the past, and Theros proved to be no exception. Players enjoyed the mechanics, devotion, and constellation that they chose to return. They were excited to see many of their favorite gods back. They liked seeing Elspeth again. They enjoyed new takes on old legendary creatures, and they liked seeing familiar place names in titles and creature types in the card type lines. All in all, it seems they did a pretty good job in selecting what we wanted to see again. And they said that's not to say that we didn't get complaints about what was missing, but more about that in lessons learned.
Yep.
Another highlight here is that the underworld was well liked and the escape mechanic was great. So while players were happy to see a return to familiar territory, they also enjoyed that they explored the facet of Theros that we hadn't done during our first visit, the underworld. So the most criticism they got about the underworld was from the players that wanted to see more of it. In turn, the underworld mechanic escape was all also really well liked.
Yeah.
Which I think is great.
Yeah, and, for sure.
This mechanic is good in
literally all formats.
Yeah, it's great. And it, I think it also benefits from having a card that gives escape to other cards you have. So you can play a non-escape deck, but get to use escape in Underworld Breach.
Yes.
Which is an extremely powerful card, which perhaps if we had some sort of an adamant card that had said something like an enchantment, all of your monocolored spells have adamant or something. Mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, maybe adamant would have been seen.
Sure.
Those mechanics that have a spell that can be used in all instances, mm-hmm. even if you're not building around it, I think get more attention.
For sure.
So I like escape though. I think it's great.
I think escape was a really good mechanic.
And then finally, the last highlight is that sagas were a big hit. It says while all other returning elements were from the Theros block, we chose one from a different source, from Dominaria. So sagas represent stories, and a top-down world inspired by Greek mythology has a lot of stories to work with. And in fact, that sagas are enchantments and Theros is an enchantments matter world, they proved too perfect to not use. They ended up giving the enchantment subtype a tiny tweak. So some sagas had 4 chapters instead of just 3 chapters. Mm-hmm. And everybody received those very well. And
yeah.
I like them. I actually got to play one on stream when I played with Magic Wazubi just a couple of weeks ago.
Nice.
I was playing Inette, the Esper Sphinx that gets to cast odd spells, and I cast a Kiorabest the Sea God for free,
so
off the top of the deck.
Good.
Yeah, so that was really great to play in Commander for free.
Mm-hmm.
Kiorabest the Sea God, great. I mean, there were a lot of cards in there that were really, really cool. So mm-hmm. and I like sagas from Dominaria, so this is cool to come back and get to see more stories used in it.
Yeah, I really liked the sagas when they first came out. I think they should at least print a couple sagas in every single set, because it's a really, really easy way to tell the story of that particular block. And I'm really looking forward to how they bring sagas into Commander Legends later this year. I think they could do some really fun stuff.
Yeah.
When they're not limited to the standard block, because I don't think there's been a saga printed in a non-standard block set yet. I think that's true.
Probably not.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't think you are.
All right. So some of the lessons learned we have from Theros Beyond Death. So we missed some returning things. 2 biggest complaints were the absence of Bestow and the fact that we didn't make new versions of all 15, well, 14, if you count Xenagos dying, of the gods. This is one of the byproducts of a single set returning to a world previously seen in multiple sets in a block. There's only so much space. Did we make the right choices? It's hard to tell, as every element has its fans. I'm curious to hear so Mara wants to hear your feedback. There's links at the end of the article. We'll have the article link in the show notes below.
Sure.
Okay.
We can make that happen.
So to tell them what you think was right and wrong. I mean, obviously with a 1 block set, you're not going to be able to print 25 legendary creatures unless it's, I don't know, Dominaria.
Yeah. I mean, I would have liked, it would have been cool to have seen all of them. I feel like I think the biggest complaint, at least from our play group, was that we didn't get to see another Farika, because the first one, the Golgari God,
yeah,
that exiles I think it's just a card or a creature card. I can't remember exactly. And then that player gets a Death Touch snake.
An enchantment snake.
Yeah. But it was like, you don't want them to have it. You should exile it and then you get a snake or something.
Right.
But it would have been really cool. I would have liked to have seen another for that. You know, I did like the gods. Obviously, you can't just return. You'd be doing Theros too. I mean.
Well, I think you could do that.
Not with 15, though. Unless you had to downshift them all to rare and they like fell out of godhood or something.
Right. You would have to spread it out throughout blocks. The last time we were on Theros, it was spread out into 3 different sets that happened all in a row. And that's how they're able to print 14. It was 14.
It was 5, 5,
then.
And 5. Yeah. The gods.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Because Xenagos was a planeswalker at the time.
Well, so
but he counted as the god.
I just see the only reason
no,
I
there
say
there was the god. There was an actual god. Yeah.
The only reason I say 15, and it says, well, 14, Xenagos died, but then we also got Clothis.
Yeah, Clothis took over.
Right.
We didn't have Clothis the first time.
I just wasn't sure if Clothis was accounted for in the 15, or
Xenagos was printed the first time.
Well, I know
as a
that
god.
Much, and Clothis wasn't. I don't know, whatever.
Well, I mean, I think they only reprinted, they only did six.
Yes, that's
correct. Yeah, it was the five monocolor, mm-hmm, and then and you Clothis. Got Athreos. And then Clothis was not a reprint. Clothis is new. So yes. They were talking about the returning. So we only got six of the original 15.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. We're clear.
We
now.
Did the math.
We're here.
We did it. So I you can't do it in one set. You can't get 15.
And you know, I do think Wizards of the Coast probably saw this coming, which is why they did the star. What was the secret lair? Yeah, the constellation secret lair, in order to give people special art of some of the old gods that they're not going to be seeing in this set, along with new art for these gods that we did see. So the second lesson learned is the rest of the Titans were missing. We only saw two of them. So not only were two and a half. We saw a Storm Titan too, but that wasn't a Titan from the Underworld. So not only were the players unhappy about some of the things that didn't come back, they were also unhappy that something new didn't have everything. The set introduced only the two Titans, Kroxa and Uro, that were in enemy colors. That and the flavor text implied that there were at least three more. Where were they?
Yeah, so what you mentioned Frost Titan?
Not Frost Titan, the Storm Titan.
Or what is Storm Titan?
It's the 5 CMC blue flying giant that was printed in Theros Beyond Death that makes it so whenever you cast a creature spell that's CMC 4 or greater, you draw a card. It's mono blue.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
And we're going to go on over to our buddies, EDHREC.com. And we're going to go to Commanders and Mono and Blue. Because I don't remember his name either. But I know he exists. And I've played against him, actually, in Online Commander. And he's flying. And he's a giant. And he doesn't have a lot of decks built around him.
It's a legendary?
Mm-hmm.
From Theros Beyond Death?
Yes.
I'm lost.
It is Thrix.
Oh.
The Sudden Storm.
Oh, that's not a Titan.
He's an elemental giant.
He's not a Titan.
He's an elemental giant.
I disagree.
And the Titans are also giants.
Okay.
Not actually Titans.
So is the Boros Commander. That's a giant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is.
He should have been one of the Titans of...
Agreed.
Of
Also He's looks like Theros. He is from Theros. So
from Theros.
That actually would work.
That would have been pretty cool. Yeah, so we didn't get to see the other Titans, but...
I'm sure we'll see him later on.
Yeah.
Somewhere. The last point that they had was that the story was underwhelming. So they announced that they were returning to Theros. There were a number of players very happy because it meant the return of Elspeth. When the Theros block ended, Elspeth was killed by Heliod and sent to the Underworld. A return would mean that the continuation of her story... Everyone kind of knew she'd get out of the Underworld, but how? And I think we even saw the promotional art, or not the promotional art, the special artwork that we got in the Mythic Edition of Elspeth had her with a golden mask. So we kind of knew way before we even knew we were going back to Theros.
Yeah.
If you could infer one to the other. So everyone kind of knew she was coming back. That they wanted to see, but no book was released, so the weight of the storytelling fell to the cards. And while the story was reflected in the set, it just wasn't a compelling presentation for the audience that had waited so long for the story. Totally agree. Very into the magic lore, and you know, I came in around the Amonkhet time, so Elspeth I kind of had to go back in time to learn about. I did think that she kind of got shorted for her story.
I mean, we didn't get a story at all for Theros Beyond Death. We got a book for Throne of Eldraine, mm-hmm. and then we had some story conflicts in Ikoria, which is coming up. But mm-hmm. I really like reading the stories.
Yes.
And it was nice when we used to get a full book. Mm-hmm. book. And then the online short novels were great. And then we moved to the weekly stories. I also really like that. So it's unfortunate that we didn't get one here, because there was a three-part like series on Theros the original time, which yes. I really, really did like.
Yes. Yeah.
The next set is Ikoria Lair of Behemoths. So highlights players like the monster theme. Ikoria wore its monster badge or its monster theme with a badge. It wore a monster badge.
It wore a monster theme badge.
Monster themed badge. So there was no missing it. Luckily, the players really enjoyed it. Magic normally has its share of monsters, but it was fun to ramp up and let the players have the ability to take on the role of the monsters with mutate. So that was good. Players embraced higher complexity when used They used Aquaria to run an experiment where they ramped up the complexity to a higher level than they'd done previously, or in previous years. Mm-hmm. Would players embrace it or would they reject it? The answer is, for the most part, they embraced it. Mutate was complicated, but it was flavorful and was fun. The feedback that was, while we shouldn't do this type of thing all the time, if we did it on occasion and tied it strongly to a good flavor or an enjoyable flavor, that it's something that people would want to see again.
Yep.
Players enjoyed the limited gameplay. And then players also fancied the Godzilla tie-in. Yeah. So Godzilla tie-in promotion with the set was them experimenting with just something. Mm-hmm. They said, I guess monster sets are just really fun to experiment with. Mm-hmm. And how would the audience feel about reskinning some cards with an IP from outside Magic? The answer was a very positive one.
Yeah, I think we have a great art community in Magic the Gathering to do alternate arts. And people have really loved that in the past. And now Wizards of the Coast can get in on it too.
And that's how I got my poster I mentioned at the beginning of the show, my Zalortha poster. Mm-hmm. That was one of the cards that didn't actually make it onto an actual print because Godzilla King of the Monsters, the BioBox promo, was that card. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was cool.
Well, one issue that sometimes I have with Wizards of the Coast when they do a set with a new theme, such like as they did with Mutate, is sometimes it's not supported enough for the commander format. I think they did a really good job in Nykoria in printing enough to actually make it supportable in the commander
format. And we had specific commander decks.
That probably helped a lot.
Yeah, because you got your Otrimi to go as for your commander
sure.
there.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, the other ones, the Apexes, they mm-hmm. all work as well. Absolutely. So it was fine.
So lessons that we learned. So companions.
Yeah, we've talked about this before.
Yeah, and they were a mistake.
It was not all of them. Some ruined the game for everyone.
Someone ruined the game for everyone, and we can't play our Elemental Otter in Commander.
We never were. Yeah, that one we couldn't, and Luris ruined the fun for everyone else.
Yeah. So that was, a callback to the very beginning of this article about how they have to balance about different formats and everything. Yeah, Luris demolished Legacy. So they need to learn that a little bit better. So second lesson is confusion over what kind of monster set it was. So it was a Godzilla tie-in that was well received. It had one drawback, and Ikoria was designed as a set that played with many different monster tropes, and Godzilla and his ilk was one vein of trope space, but it wasn't all that they were doing. So the focus on Godzilla in the beginning of previews made players think that we were doing something similar to Rise of the Eldrazi, where the set was all about giant creatures, and in reality it was about mutating creatures into monsters and bonding with monsters and human monster interaction. So the miscommunication did cause some players dissatisfaction, as they felt didn't deliver what they promised. And last is unhappiness about the disconnect with the story. Another common complaint got was the cards and book contradicted one another on several occasions. In the past, we'd had elements in the book missing in the card set or vice versa, but this set was the first set in a while where the book said one thing and the cards said the opposite. Looking into ways to help avoid the disconnects like this happening in the future, I know Mauro in the past has talked about how the set and the story are developed separately, such that, you know, we'll talk about in a second, or with the Guilds of Ravnica set, with Dak Faden dying in the story and not actually getting a card.
Yeah.
So as they said, if we knew he was going to die, we'd give him a card.
I mean, Narset wasn't really in the story at all. She was mentioned once, but mm-hmm. she had a really, really cool card.
Yeah.
We saw her in the Jeskai colors again here. She had a very, I think her card's pretty cool. There were some inconsistencies with Vivian's character. Yes. There were some inconsistencies with the protagonist and the antagonist here. And it just, to be fair, I didn't know. I didn't even think about some of these things until I read it. And of course I do follow the Vorthos community, you know, as well.
Right.
But I didn't remember seeing a ton of this. I get a lot of my Magic content through, Twitter, because right. I read a lot of, you know, we have a lot of content creator friends. I read a lot of their content, but I wasn't familiar that there were so much or so many disconnects. Yeah.
Right. Right.
So if you weren't aware, you can easily take a look online just to see where the cards and the story don't match. And there was a little bit of that.
Yeah, definitely. So Core Set 2021 as the next set.
So. Yeah, so we had some highlights here. So players enjoyed the terminology changes. So the biggest items were that hound changed to dog, and then milling finally got keyworded. Instead of target player takes the top card of the library and puts it into their graveyard, mm-hmm. We actually got mill. So that was really great. People were super excited for that. including me. And then reprints, top notch, chef's kiss here.
Yeah.
Even, I mean, we even said this. So another big source of positive response was all the exciting reprints of the product. So we got reprints of Grim Tutor, Ugin the Spirit Dragon, Azusa Lost But Seeking, Solemn Simulacrum, Scavenging Ooze, and Containment Priest. A common reply that Maro got was, please do more of this.
Yeah, this is what core sets are supposed to be, in my opinion.
Yeah, get a couple of strong things and then also some stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's about reprints. You know, the commons, the uncommons, the rares, the mythics.
That's what master sets are for.
Yeah, but those aren't standard legal.
players like the vertical cycle and frame. So one of the things that they've learned from the Booster Fund initiative is how much players like it when you can imbue a frame with feeling. So they said it shouldn't have been a surprise when we took the cycle of five planeswalker cards and made frames to match them. That was a huge hit. I really like them. We got the Basri Ket stuff. We got Liliana stuff, Garrick stuff. And then players also really enjoyed that they made a vertical cycle of planeswalkers in their spells, which all use that same frame. So that was really cool.
Yeah.
And then shrines were a huge hit. The most common request he gets on Blogatog is for us to return to Kamigawa. He said, while that's a very tall ask, I was happy that we could at least give Kamigawa fans a taste of the plane by creating a brand new cycle of shrines. And he's also not sure whether they were Kamigawa fans or just Shrine fans, but it got a lot of positive feedback.
Yeah, for sure. It was a fun mechanic, maybe not the absolute best, but we'll see.
Yeah.
After rotation, we'll see. So some lessons learned. We have issues with Teferi. When they first announced last fall core set 2021 to have Teferi as the face set, got a lot of worried comments from the players comparing it to the last core set where they had Chandra and they printed Chandra on three different cards. They were worried that they were going to have three different Teferis along with the Teferis that were already printed in standard to have to deal with. So there was an expectation that they would do the same thing again, but they did not.
And they didn't. And they said that it was something that they don't know if they would do that again.
Yeah.
Because people expected three. Expected three. And when we got one, you were like, is this really a Teferi set?
I was worried that there was going to be three. I was actually happy that there wasn't three, strictly because of what Teferi would do, what a Teferi card would do.
Sure, yeah. Sure. I mean, the last set when we saw Chandra, I mean, two of them did something.
Yes.
But they wasn't busted. And I was personally hoping to see three Teferi here. If we were doing this whole thing where we're going to have a full year of Teferi and this is the set of Teferi, there wasn't really a whole lot of Teferi here.
No, there sure wasn't.
No.
So players also expected more mechanical ties to the face of the set, AKA Teferi. So Teferi is one planeswalker card. A lot of players expected more than that. So kind of just reiterating, but more on the mechanics side of thing rather than just number of cards printed.
They also said, though, that others compared him to Nicol Bolas when Nicol Bolas was the face of the core set because there was just one card and they didn't get the flip. They didn't get the creature flipping into the planeswalker here either. So they weren't sure what exactly is the right amount of interconnectivity between the face of the core set and the cards in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So Jumpstart highlights, players loved it.
Yeah.
That's number one. I do. Please give me more.
I only played on Arena so far.
And I've been able to play it twice because that's all I could find.
Right.
So it says this year's had a lot of successes, but no single thing has produced more positive comments to Mark Rosewater than Jumpstart. He said he loved the concept the first time he heard it. And it seemed that we all agreed when we got our hands on it. So the newest question they've been asked is, when are we going to do another one?
Right.
So that's great. And then players enjoyed the variety of themes. The design teams went the extra length to make a lot of cool themes for the product, and everybody liked to talk about them. I mean, it was cool playing like Walls and Medics, or playing Pirates and Dinosaurs,
for sure.
Or Discard and Discard if you got lucky enough to get two discards.
Absolutely.
or Goblins and Goblins, which everybody would tweet that one out if they played it on Arena. They're like, I got double Goblins. It's like, good luck, your opponent.
Yeah.
So it's been fun watching players get a chance to mix and match all the cool themes. That was great.
Yeah, and I thought they did a really good job throwing in some new legendary creatures. For us Commander players, they are very expensive due to the limited supply of Jumpstart.
Which I think
we
even mentioned last week.
Right.
Yeah.
So so the biggest lessons learned is there's not enough of it. Obviously, we know we've been going through this pandemic issue. There was a small print run on the first one. There is another print run coming. Rumor is end of August, but don't quote me on that. The other lesson is the themes that you wanted weren't there. So it was, you know, a lot of people liked a lot of the themes that they used, but some of the other themes, they said, where's my slime theme? and then they printed Secret Lair slimes. No. So, you know, obviously if they do come back to Jumpstart and make another product, they're going to include more themes. It's not just going to be a regurgitation of the same themes. So I think more Jumpstart is what people are looking
so
for.
So it was fun because actually I think it was Gavin Verhey just the other day. I don't know if you saw this thread on Twitter, but they did a Jumpstart at home. Oh. And so it was a design your own Jumpstart pack.
Okay.
So it was like, okay, so here's the cards that I like. And so he explains exactly how many basic lands you need. He explains that you need a mana fixer for whatever it is that you're doing, because obviously that was the dual land that would come in. Yep. And then you have a specific set of cards. It was like one rare, a specific number of uncommons. You have commons that can fill in this spot. You have to have some spells and then fill it out with basics. So there were a lot of people that were talking about making their own custom packs and then saying, this is my... I don't know, whatever theme it's ooze. If you, like you said,
right.
You're like, this is my ooze theme pack. Mm-hmm. And then you have cards that care about ooze. And then when you pull it out, you can play with not only the ones that were designed in Jumpstart, but your own. So that was actually a really, really cool idea, because then you could throw in your, this is my, my phasing pack. Like if you really like the phasing, like for Mirage,
that's pretty cool.
Or you're like, this is my Battalion pack, cause I really like Battalion or whatever it is. So I actually think that's a really smart idea and would be really fun to build small extra packs. So you could have one pack for like all mechanics or something. This is my Adamant pack. You can use Adamant some more.
It has to be one color though.
There's that clock. I think a clockwork gnome, the clockwork cogwork, something. It's colorless.
Okay.
That one works.
That one.
There's a couple in each color. So you'd be good to go.
Okay.
Perfect. You fill it out with monocolored spells that care about multiple pips. Who knows? All right. Let's do the top 5 to 10 cards from each of these sets that came out. So from a commander perspective, we saw a lot of stuff. Let's circle back. So Throne of Eldraine actually had a lot. Funny enough, the top 5 is a buy box and 4 Brawl commanders. So Korvald, Kenrith, Alila, Chulainn, and Sir Gwen. But from the actual packs that you could have opened, we have Torbran, Emry, Lurker of the Lock, Sir Conrad the Grim, Iara, First of Lothwaine, and Grum Gully the Generous. I see these all over the place. This set was fantastic for Commander, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It was really great. I think Sir Conrad's fantastic. Torbran is super strong. We actually just played with Chicago Style Gaming last week on stream. So if you haven't checked that out, check that game out. That was really interesting. But I think that Throne of Eldraine brought a ton to Commander.
Yeah, for sure. And then in Theros Beyond Death, we have top 5 cards of Dryad of the Elysian Grove, Thassa's Oracle, Underworld Breach, Nyx Bloom Ancient, and Heliod's Intervention. So tons of ramps, win cons, and then Underworld Breach, which is like the pseudo Yawgmoth's Will.
Thassa's Oracle caused a commotion in the CDH community when that came out. I think Nyx Bloom Ancient is bonkers. I played with some folks from Commander 99 previously, and they said Nyx Bloom Ancient is one of those cards where it's like, we're going to leave this alone for a while, but one day this might be ridiculous.
Oh,
and
I think it already is.
Like, it needs to go. Oh, but yeah. I think it's fun to play against. Yeah,
for
very
sure,
cool.
For sure.
Ikoria, Lair of Behemoths. Not surprising. We have 5 lands on top here. We have the Triomes, the Ketria, Zagoth, Indatha, Savi, and Raugrin Triome. Aside from that, we've got some ultimatums. The only Apex that makes it in the top 10 is Nethroi, and then Drianith Magistrate for all of us degenerate Azorius players.
As a degenerate Nethroi lover, Drianith Magistrate's fine too, I guess.
Okay.
And then core set 2021, we have as the top cards, we have Sanctum of All, the legendary enchantment, Garruk's Uprising, Rada, Heart of Keld, Teferi's Ageless Insight, and Teferi, Master of Time. But I don't want to disclude number 6, Mungara, the Diplomat, finally mono white card draw. Super, super awesome to see. Teferi's Ageless Insight for extra drawing, Rada for lands matter, Garruk's Uprising was a really, really, really great card for that new mono green commanders from Jumpstart, which we might include next. And obviously Teferi, Master of Time is bonkers in Commander versus any other format.
Yeah. Super, super strong there. And then the top 5 cards here from Jumpstart. We have Emile the Blessed, our legendary unicorn, Naoth of the Dire Hunt. It is the fight commander. Ineaz, Gale Force, the flying matters commander. But it changes stuff around, so it's great for Commander, bad for playing online at home Commander. So I think this will see a bigger spike when people can play in paper. Thriving Heath made it into the top. It's the dual land that comes in tapped. You choose another color, it's the white one.
Yeah.
And then Alisora Shepherd, which is the elf shaman that has green spells you control cannot be countered, and makes elves into also dinosaurs. So we got a lot of stuff from this set.
And when Jumpstart gets reprinted, I'm assuming we're going to see these legendary creatures just shoot up this list.
Shoot up. And I expect that we're going to see a lot more cards because there's a lot of people that don't have them. And I know there are some people that don't brew until they know that they're going to have access.
Agreed.
And our LGS and stuff just don't have access. So that might be why we're seeing what we're seeing here. So those are the cards that we got out of this past year.
For our format.
For our format of Commander, which is fantastic. Yeah, I love it. So that wraps up the look at this past year. Mm-hmm. He says, from my vantage point, he's glad that they pushed boundaries and designed a whole bunch of cool stuff, but they learned the design has to be careful about how and when they do it. So we'll post this below in the show notes and go give him some feedback. We've really liked what's come out in this past year.
Yeah,
so that
it's
was
been great.
It was really great. It was nice to look back at this. And then also in the link, he's been doing this since 2005. So you can go back and look at every single year's article. Mm-hmm. And that's what we were talking about this week. So we also, you're probably saying right now, but what about Commander of the Week? So we're going to hold off on doing Commander of the Week every week. We would like to focus on the core content for each week, and then we want to probably do it every other week. We also have some patron content coming up soon, so we have some patrons that have Commander of the Week feature weeks coming up, so we're going to be working with some of our patrons on creating content specifically related to a commander deck of their choice. So they're going to be we're essentially going to be working through a full summary explanation of their deck, and we're going to feature that on episodes. So that is coming up, so stay tuned for that. And we want to thank you, as always, for listening. If you would like to contact us, you can find our podcast on Twitter at GuardianPod. You can find me on Twitter at ATFlory.
You can find me on Twitter at WormCoilEngine.
And you can email us at GuardianProjectPod@gmail.com. Again, as always, if you're on Discord, feel free to reach out to us, and we will get you in. And stay tuned tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, twitch.tv/ATFlory. We're going to be streaming Paper Commander with Andy Zepke and Bruce from the Epic Experiment Podcast. And we will see you all next week.
See ya.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
I just want them to re-release Throne of Eldraine. Yeah. I like to just play more limited Throne of Eldraine now. I really like when I see it pop up on Arena.
More limited.
More Eldraine.
More.
Ginger brew. That's me. It's like the spawn.